The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'm going to be reading to you from the Washington Post. And before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, we remind you that neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. They are simply selected for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, we begin our journey in the Pacific Northwest, in a capital that long has marched to the beat of its own drum and manages to maintain its groove in plenty of changes, so write the editors. Our writer guide is Andrea Sachs, and her article is from the You're Going Where column in the September 12, 2018 issue of the Washington Post. A few miles outside Olympia, Washington, I passed the Slater-Kinney Road exit, and in my excitement at seeing my Riot Girls history, completely forgot the band's origins. According to my revisionist version, civic leaders renamed the street in honor of Slater-Kinney, the feminist punk group that Carrie Portlandia Brownstein and Corin Tucker formed in the 1990s while living in the capital city. Once in town, specifically at a ceramics class with craft beer, a local reminded me about the actual order of events. The musicians named the trio after the sign, not vice versa. But the truth didn't shake my faith in Ole Pride, which bubbles up like the artisan well water that has been slaking Olympian thirst for centuries. Keep Portland in Portland, keep Seattle in Seattle, said Ned Hayes, founder of Oily Arts, a cultural publication. We want to do our own thing. Despite the city's location between two Pacific Northwest juggernauts, Olympia does not suffer from middle child syndrome. The city has a distinct identity that is more convivial than Anxie, although both can exist under one roof. At Encore Chocolates and Teas, co-owner Dean Jones informed me that I was standing in the spot where drummer Dave Grohl first performed with Nirvana. Then he pressed a square of artisanal chocolate into my palm and sent me on my way. A few doors down, Rainy Day Records general manager Adam Hardaway proudly pointed to the children's play area among the vinyl records and DVD rentals. We have toys so that little kids will think this place is cool, he said. Apparently, coloring books are a bigger draw than Kurt Cobain, who once shopped here. Over several days, I gained an appreciation for Olympia's community spirit, which appeared around every corner, at the farmer's market and in oyster bars, at breweries and coffee roasters, on the Capitol campus and along the boardwalk, at Percival Landing. When I drove by exit 108 for the last time, I was more convinced than ever that Olympia would have dedicated a piece of the city to Slater-Kinney, even if it thought of it first. Well, what about where to go, eat, shop, stay, etc.? Well, we're going to take a look at first where to go and some local faves. The Billy Frank Jr. Nisqually National Wildlife Refuge fills every inch of landscape. Riparian forest, estuary, wetlands with critters. The nature reserve is the permanent or temporary residence of birds, more than 250 species, fish, 95, amphibians, 7, insects, 60, and mammals, both clawed and vision-impaired, Townsend's mole, and flippered and Betty Davis-eyed stellar sea lion. The wildlife checklist runs 11 pages long, but not all of the animals appear in the pamphlet. I had to write in my discovery the Pacific tree frog, which materialized before my eyes like a magic eye 3D poster. Along the mile-long Twin Barnes Loop Trail and its tributary routes, birds swooped, frogs belched, and blackberries jumped off the bushes and into my mouth. On the Nisqually River, a local hiker and I stopped to try to identify a loud buzzing sound. We call those bird calls fishing boats, she said. Artemis Folk School is more than Etsy 101. Stacy Waterman Hoey, a former specialist on climate and energy policy, founded the Training Arts Center in 2013 to help wean residents from their dependency on manufactured goods. Communities should know how to make and do things for themselves, she said. So instead of heading up Williams-Sonoma or Guitar Center, you can sign up for a class and learn to make a maple wood serving spoon, a creamer and sugar bowl set, or a ukulele, or pick up a skill with no big box counterparts, such as wool boot felting or bow and arrow construction with one instinctive shooting lesson included. During a play with clay session held Friday nights, the instructor showed us how to turn a slab into planters and soap dishes, thereby saving us a trip to Bed Bath & Beyond. And here's a guidebook must. If you can't remember Washington State's number, count the 42 steps to the Capitol building. The free 50-minute tour covers local and state history, architecture, government operations, and obscure geography. Olympia was named after the mountain you can't see because that building is blocking it, our guide said of the Olympic Mountains, which the Temple of Justice shielded from view. Inside the Capitol, we learned that the structure contains one of the world's largest collections of Tiffany lights, originally 489 fixtures, and that guns are permitted in most public areas, although metal detectors are not. This is the People's House, Mark said. We don't have security. He showed us the rotunda, the state reception room, and the two chambers, which varied in decor, down to the floral carpet design, coast rhododendrons for the House and dogwoods for the Senate. All good tours end in the gift shop, he said with finality. Then he left us to browse the shelves for wine, Bigfoot smoked salmon, and other state-endorsed products. To tap into the unofficial Ole tagline, it's the water, go to the source, the Schmidt House in Tumwater Falls Park. In 1904, Olympia Brewery owner Leopold Schmidt and his wife Joanna built the three-story, eight-bathroom hilltop mansion, which is open for tours. By the front door, history manager Don Trosper, or alternate guide Bob Krim, who worked for the family for 60 years, will point out the company logo embedded in the wall. Pay attention to the image of the waterfalls, which will return in the second half of the visit. A few original pieces remain, such as a buffet, a file cabinet, and a velvet hat worn by Clara, wife of the Smith's eldest son. At the park, a short drive from the house, a half-mile trail loops around the Deschutes River and Falls, which once supported a power station and a paper mill. On the walk, you can see the tower of the old brewery that turned artisan spring water into potable gold. From mid-September through mid-October, watch the salmon swim upstream and navigate the fish ladders like ninja warriors. What about to eat? Well, here's a local fave. After Olympia Brewery closed in 2003, the hops torch was passed down to Fish Brewing Company, open since 1993, and its Fishtail Brew Pub, the city's oldest joint of its kind. In 1996, the beer-making operation moved across the street, but you can still drink to the old days in the Fishbowl, the diminutive tap room that features several India Pale Ales and Spire Mountain Ciders on tap. The menu plays matchmaker with its food and drink. It recommends the organic amber with the Fishtail tacos, for instance, and the Mud Shark Porter with the bangers and mash. To meet the fish loyalists, snag an invite to the Mug Club Room, an alcove lined with members drinking vessels engraved with such personal truths as beer me up and I drink, I swim. Warning, Dellinger's Cocktails and Kitchen, which was named after the Depression-era gangster and occupies a former 1920s bank, might abscond with your futsy drinking habits. Instead of the same old-fashioned, try the bar's Osaka version, a mix of tequila, mezcal, agave, bitters, and flamed orange oil. You can also expand your cocktail repertoire at the 100-bottle rum bar, which adjoins the speakeasy. The menu for both rooms defies the illogic of the kitchen, which is set in an old teller station and is equipped with an oven, griddle, two burners, and a cooler. Imbiber favorites include duck confit, mussels in lemongrass broth, and a whiskey donut bread pudding. On Tiki Tuesdays, the scene goes south in Pacific with tropical drinks served in head-shaped punch bowls while the wrestling mask of Mexican locadores watch from across the bar. Well, this here's a guidebook must. Oyster neophytes do not slurp unsupervised at the Chelsea Farms Oyster Bar. The staff is on hand to offer advice, support, and a dozen when you're ready to commit. The Bonita is an oyster eater's oyster. It is savory, kelpy, and very beachy, then General Manager Cody Goodwin explained. The Gem is snappy and more vegetal, and the Olympia is very intense. Yes, you heard that right. The restaurant, which runs a shellfish pipeline from its nearby farm, serves the coveted Puget Sound oyster, which once hovered on the brink of extinction. The chef prepares oysters in myriad ways, including fried and baked in ceviche with a lime and pepper granita, or simply raw. Just give it one or two chews, Goodwin suggested, of the unadorned version. Adventurous diners can also try the geoduck crudo, which might require a bit more jaw. Every Spar Cafe meal should include a glass of water. The restaurant and bar is the only spot in Olympia besides the Artisan Commons Park to offer drinking water collected from an artesian well. Try a sample dip at the fountain by the entrance. The Spar has lived a long and somewhat roguish life as a saloon in the late 1800s, a gentleman's club in the mid-1900s, and a backroom hangout for the king of grunge, Cobain, in the 90s, I should say. In 2007, the McMinnon brothers adopted the cafe into its family of restored and repurposed historic buildings, their only project in Olympia. The menu showcases the Pacific Northwest bounty, but also spins the classics. For instance, the kitchen smothers the Take Me to the Moon burger with coffee bean jam and crowns the truffle fries with black garlic aioli. Now, what about the shop? Well, here's a local fave. Obviously, Dumpster Values. How you like the name of that store? Dumpster Values sells flannel. The outdoorsy fabric gone grunge makes sense in the Pacific Northwest. But the secondhand clothing store, which counted Cobain among its patrons, goes beyond lumberjack couture. You can shop for basics such as jeans and t-shirts, or by country, India, Japan, Uganda era, 1950s, 60s, 70s, or military branch, Army camo, Navy peacoats. You don't have to dig deep to unearth such finds as a Christian Dior trench, a handmade crocheted cape, or a Gap tote surprisingly labeled as one of a kind. One shopper ran through the store waving his golden ticket, a Keep Portland in Portland t-shirt. To complete your lifestyle look, pick up a skateboard at Noping and vinyl at Funk Fuzz, both of which shares floor space with Dumpster Values. Then we go on to Gallery Boom. It injects the antiques mall model with some youth serum. I call us Lower G Gallery, said Christine Malik, the owner-artist. I have people to make, who make knit hats, and then there are chopped-up baby dolls. Malik rents space to about 125 regional artists who sell their creations for an average of less than $100. Current exhibitors include Joel Montes, who designed ceramic cups in provocative body shapes, the Poshness Monster, a jeweler who incorporates doll eyes and limbs into pendants and rings, Tom Boscher, who refashions clock and camera pieces into LED-lit wall sculptures, and Papa Dick, an octogenarian who sells his 200-plus paintings for $10 each. He doesn't want his kids to have to deal with them when he's dead, Malik said. One of her youngest exhibitors is a teen named Alyssa Spalding, who sculpts figures out of cheese wax, edible parts not included. Here's a guidebook must. At the Olympia Farmers Market, a Johnson Berry Farm vendor conducted a short survey before administering a sample to a couple. Do you like spicy Thai food, she asked. They answered yes and received a spoonful of golden raspberry habanero triple X jam. My mouth is going to be on fire for an hour, the husband muttered. Of course, you can find edibles without warning labels at the year-round emporium, open since 1975. Bins and tables overflow with apples, cherries, peaches, homemade sauerkraut, cheeses, potted herbs, breads, mushroom kits, and more. Among the crafts, you can find ply-split braided necklaces, bellowing gourds at Happy Hen Farm, colorful tops and doorstops at Wood Loved by Larry, and burlap bags made of recycled coffee and feed sacks at Healy Originals. On Saturdays, M7 Bremer pounds out poems on her Underwood Olivetti. The writer has fielded requests on love, marriage, awkward family conversations, listening to each other, and rain. A recent verse on Olympia read in part, "Strands of green seaweed tie me to this place." To smell like a local and not Hilton Garden Inn soap, coat yourself in Ole Girl or Ole Guy, 2 cents sold at Archibald Sisters. The store, which has been in the olfactory biz since 1975, stocks more than 150 fragrances, including 50 pre-mixed blends. Depending on your mood, you can smell like a tropical fruit cup, 2 out of 3 magi, a weather system, or a hippie. Budding perfumers can concoct their own signature whiff, though to avoid nose overload, stick to the 3-cent rule. Don't be afraid to spread your scent through the rest of the shop. Otherwise, you will miss the slew of quirky gifts, including Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg Kotchkes cannabis-themed goodies, and irreverent socks. You smell delicious, one pair, Coos. How about where to stay? Well, here's a local fave. A map in the front room of the Ground Inn pinpoints who has slept here. Visitors from France, New Zealand, Scotland, Taiwan, China, Germany, and Afghanistan, among other countries. Despite their different nationalities, they all share an allegiance to the Republic of Communal Living. The Hilltop Hostel offers two same-sex dorm rooms, $40 per bed, and a pair of private rooms, $80, plus a den with musical instruments. Calling all didgeridoo and udu players, an outdoor area with a hammock and a kitchen with fridge and microwave privileges. The rate includes continental breakfast and homemade granola, yogurt, fruit, and breads. Guests seeking more personal space can book Union Place, a one-bedroom home with a media room, or Brick House, a converted carriage house with a loft, but they will still have to share the parking lot. A guidebook must? Well, if you're an 1887 Victorian mansion, which the Swantown Inn and Spa is, your quirks are charming rather than annoying. Nathan and Allen, or Casey Allen, rather, the married owners of the four-bedroom property, provide a notebook with advice on how to raise the shades, open the windows, the dowel is your friend, and operate the shower. Guests in the Columbia room also receive a lesson on the Victorian foot soaker. The grounds are more intuitive. The pear and apple trees bear fruit that ends up in such breakfast dishes as apple cheddar bacon souffle, and the apiary produces the honey for Nathan's scones. The arrival of banana coconut sorbet at 8 in the morning was less clear until Nathan explained how the frozen course appeals to nearly every type of diet. And what to explore? Well, here's a local fave. On a walking tour of the South Capitol Neighborhood Historic District, binoculars are advised so that you can read the small bronze medallions on the buildings without trespassing. The area is a veritable architectural encyclopedia of 20th century styles. You can print out a map on the city's website that highlights 40 structures, including Joseph Wallab House, a 1926 colonial revival home built and occupied by one of Olympia's most prominent architects. The Greg Morris House, owned by a Supreme Court justice and later the founder of a fancy ladies' clothing store, and a section of the Old Oregon Trail. After completing the list, cross the bridge into Wildwood and grab a coffee and slice at the neighborly outpost of Olympia Coffee and Vic's Pizzeria. Here's a guidebook must. 20 years ago, downtown was grunge, said Hayes, the Ole Arts founder, and not just in terms of music. Over the years, the grit of the Olympia Downtown Historic District has receded, with the independent retailers and inventive restaurateurs stepping in with, say, Betty Boop Meats, Holly Golightly Threads, Hot Toddy, and vegan Mexican brunch, Hart's Mesa. The area supports 4 theaters, 3 bookstores, including 80-year-old browsers, 2 kid-approved museums that parents can enjoy without their dependents, 1 cider distillery with a teeny tiny tap room, 3 chocolate shops, and 4 breweries. If you'd like to opine on coffee or art, you should attend a public cupping or tasting at Olympia Coffee Roasting, or vote for your favorite sculpture on the Percival Landing. The winner will earn a permanent pedestal in the city of Olympia. Well, you may have heard us mention the Old Oregon Trail a few minutes ago in our tour of Olympia. Well, writer Emily Gillespie in the October 19, 2018 issue of the Washington Post tells us the Oregon Desert Trail is just that, complete with canyons and rattlesnakes. Let's see what she's going to tell us. I felt every drop of sweat make its way down my face, neck, and back as I stared down the rattlesnake, its beady eyes locked with mine, daring me to move. At this point, a few miles into my solo backpacking trip through Oregon's remote desert, I considered turning around and heading the several miles back to my car. After I caught my breath, I shook off the idea. Testing myself, I thought, is exactly what I signed up for. I had the idea for the trip a few months ago. The Travel Oregon had released an elaborate animated advertisement featuring lush rivers, snow-peaked mountains, miles of vineyards and coastline, and breathtaking Crater Lake. When I watched it, I couldn't help thinking, false advertising. Though Oregon is often depicted in terms of Douglas fir-filled forest, the truth is that half the state is water-starved desert. Even I, after calling Oregon home for 20 years, am guilty of greenwashing. Although I knew the desert was within Oregon's borders, I had never explored it. Then I learned of the Oregon Desert Trail, a 750-mile W-shaped path that weaves through the state's most arid landscape. The trail shows off some of the state's unsung attractions, including the Oregon Badlands, Lost Forest, Hawaii Canyonlands and picturesque Steens Mountain, a single mountain that stretches more than 9,000 feet high and 50 miles north to south. Created by the Oregon Natural Desert Association, or ONDA, Conservation Group, as a way to spur appreciation for the lands it is trying to protect, the trail is unusual in many ways. A big one, it isn't really a trail. Waypoints on a map will help guide you, but the route isn't marked. One-third of the route is cross-country, so a GPS device and compass skills are necessary. Finding your own way gives the journey a choose-your-own-adventure quality. Carving through the least populated areas of the state, the trail is also remote, but that's part of the appeal. Wildlife biologist and thru-hiker Sage Clegg, the first person to hike the trail end-to-end, said she really saw other people when she went into a nearby town to resupply, because she's witnessed hikers clogging the Pacific Crest and Appalachian trails in what's known in the hiking community as the wild effect, in reference to the popular book-turned-movie. She appreciated the contrast. I love a lonely trail, she said. It helps me be able to interact with the natural world as if it were something that I could actually communicate with. The trail's stewards also see its location as part of its charm. You might hear people say, there's nothing out there. It's a wasteland, trail coordinator Renee Patrick said. We don't think it's a wasteland. It's one of the most remote places left in our country, and we want people to experience that firsthand. Sent for a loop. Because I'm not a thru-hiker, I settled on a 22-mile loop that traversed one of the canyons that makes the Hawaii Canyonlands, an area affectionately called Oregon's Grand Canyon, tucked in the southeast corner of the state. The undeveloped area is also one of the largest unprotected areas in the American West. I planned 3 days for the loop. In preparation for the desert conditions, I went on an exposed 6-mile hike near Portland on an unusually hot day and barely went through a liter of water. To be safe, though, I planned to drink about 3 liters of water a day and would carry more than twice that amount for one stretch of the hike. I spent the night before my hike at Birch Creek Historic Ranch. Homesteaded around 1900, the property along the Hawaii River is now a popular spot for rafters. I was disappointed that it was cloudy when darkness fell, because the region is one of the largest pockets of land untouched by light pollution, according to a 2016 analysis of its artificial light called the New World Atlas of Artificial Sky Brightness. In the middle of night, however, loud bullfrogs alerted me to the cloudless sky overhead. The dark, empty backdrop allowed the stars the perfect stage to dazzle, and the moon shone down on me like a headlight. The next day, I left the ranch on foot and followed an old jeep road to an open field before reconnecting with the river. The scenery was so breathtaking that once more I stopped abruptly and said, wow, even though no one was around to hear it. Craggy red rocks jutted out from the sloped canyon wall, creating magnificent spires and rock formations that looked like petrified crash of a wave. Only after a few hours of hiking, though, I felt the desert's ruthless effects. It was, in a word, grueling. The first 6 miles, which on a path would normally take me about 3 hours, took 8. At times, the steep canyon walls emptied straight into the river, and my options for moving forward were to hop along the boulder-sized lava rocks, machete my way through thick reeds of grass taller than myself, or scramble up the hillside and walk at a slant, using the sagebrush to help keep me perpendicular to the ground. Each proved difficult in its own way. With the glaring sun beating down on me, rattlesnakes restarting my heart, and extra time and energy spent calculating my next step, I was exhausted by the end of the day. I was also out of water. In practice, instead of 3 liters a day, I'd gone through 3 liters and a half day. I could refill, but the next night of my planned loop was nowhere near a reliable water source, meaning the 7 liters I could carry wouldn't be enough for me. After setting up my tent along a rare bit of flat, sandy ground, I decided to turn my 3-day trip into an overnight out and back. I was learning firsthand an important lesson of the desert. Water is king. Clegg and other hikers who have done the entire trail had to cache water throughout, especially in the more remote pockets. Sitting at camp and feeling a bit clobbered by the hostile landscape, I would encounter 3 more rattlesnakes on my way back. I looked up to catch the sun setting on a circular rock towering on a hill across the river, and the golden hue it reminded me of the Colosseum. Rock formations like this one and another in the region reminiscent of ancient pillars make it easy to see why a nearby town is named Rome. After hiking about the next day, I drove in that direction, stopping for a night at a bed and breakfast. when in Rome. On what would have been the third day of the original loop plan, I set out to find an area that would give me a taste of the cross-country hiking I had missed by cutting that trek short. I settled on a stretch of the Oregon Desert Trail near Rome, which turned out to be a dot on the map that I would have blown by if not for a lone business along Highway 95. After scaling the hill, I was met with flatland. The only thing in sight was miles and miles of sagebrush. The level ground made it much easier to hike, but after about an hour into my journey, I picked up on what made this part of the trail difficult, keeping track of where you're going. Moving left and right to navigate the sagebrush, and without a mountain, river, or highway as a reference point, it was hard to maintain my intended direction. More than once, I glanced down at my GPS to learn I was headed in the opposite direction of where I wanted to go. After my hike, I stayed the night at Rome Station, a part convenience store, part diner with a few cabins, which caters to regional ranchers and truckers traveling between Nevada and Idaho. Over a burger and beer at the bar, I chatted with owner Joseph McElhannon, a fellow patron, a self-proclaimed cowboy poet from Texas, who wore his long gray hair tucked under a wide-brimmed straw hat and a leather vest over his long-sleeved black T-shirt. McElhannon told me that he likes the trail but doesn't like ONDA. Over the years, the conservation group has made land use proposals that have left ranchers worried about grazing rights and business owners like McElhannon concerned about access for hunting, a sport that keeps his business going in the winter. ONDA is aware of its reputation, Trail Coordinator Patrick said, and hopes the trail creates opportunities for conversations with local stakeholders about the best path forward. Despite his reservations, McElhannon agreed to have Rome Station listed among the trail resources and was holding a few resupply packages for hikers due to stop by in the coming months. He said he likes hikers. He used to be a backpacker. Even more, he loves showing people the beautiful slice of world he calls home. The experience left me with a new appreciation for this part of the state and for hiking without the ease and comfort of a trail. Doing just a small portion of the Oregon Desert Trail reminded me of nature's riotous side and challenged me in the best way. It pushed me out of my comfort zone and forced me to trudge a path full of lurking rattlesnakes and stunning star-filled skies that was uniquely mine. And by the way, Melanie Gillespie is a writer based in Portland, Oregon, and she has a website, MelanieGillespie.com, or Emily Gillespie, excuse me, .com, EmilyGillespie, EmilyGillespie.com. And if you'd like to go, here are some travel tips for taking a look at the Oregon Desert Trail. Places to stay. There's the Birch Creek Historic Ranch. From Highway 95, you go 8 miles north of Jordan Valley. Turn west of the Jordan Crater sign onto Cow Creek Road, and you follow the BLM, Hawaii River access signs, 28 miles to the ranch. How do you like those directions, huh? And you can go online, too, to learn them more, and it's blm.gov/visit/birch-creek-historic-ranch. That's blm.gov/visit/birch-creek-historic-ranch. This ranch, owned by the Bureau of Land Management, has 5 free campsites along the Hawaii River. The property has a water source and restroom that is open year-round. However, the best access is between May and October. The ranch, a road into the ranch, is filled with potholes. Vehicles with four-wheel drive are recommended, and the place to eat, by the way, is 3605 Highway 95, and it's called Rome Station, a welcome site along a long drive. Rome Station offers full breakfast, burgers, chicken fried steaks, as well as beer, soda, and milkshakes, open 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily. And that's going to bring us to the end of another journey on the Armchair Traveler. We certainly hope you've enjoyed your trek through the Oregon Desert Trail today, among other things, and that you'll be back with us next week. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast readily available as a podcast at the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Questions and comments may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.